Welcome to After Cana, a Ferris Love podcast dedicated to exploring the vocation of marriage. In each episode, we bring you stories, advice, and insights from experts and seasoned couples to help guide you in your journey, whether you're dating, engaged, or newly married. I'm your host, Gabby Quinlan, and I'm so excited to introduce Peter and Teresa Martin. The Martins are parents of 8 children, founders of the Votiwa Community and Institute, and authors of The Rule, St. John Paul II's Rule for a Joy-Filled Marriage of Divine Love. Thank you guys for being here with me today.
Thank you, Gabby, for having us.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
So excited to talk about all the things with you. But first, I wanted to just hear a little bit about the two of you and tell me how you got into this world of, you know, marriage, JP2, all of it. I want to hear it.
That's a long story.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Right.
It goes back 20 years.
We definitely feel like it was a vocation. We were specifically called to work on marriage and family in the church. We knew this from the very beginning of our engagement, and we ended up pursuing graduate studies so that we could work in the church. So right after we got married, we moved to Rome and spent 4 years there studying theology.
Wow.
And yeah, we were blessed to make it for 4 years. We had very little money, but people supported us along the way, and we had scholarships, and yeah.
And I mean, it's with everybody's journey, it's there's a path, right? And God doesn't give it to you all at once. And even so there were some complications with, I had to come back a little bit early without finishing one degree. And anyway, I got stuck in between the European and American systems, and I wasn't able to continue on, but Peter was. Mm-hmm. So he got his degree from the JP2 Institute in DC. And I had to just be patient.
Yeah.
And you know, we started having kids, and and life goes on. Fast forward 15 years, and I was helping Pete along his side with the marriage ministry,
yeah.
And doing the retreats and doing the talks and whatnot. But then we found a way, because it was always our desire for us both to have
Absolutely.
Degrees in marriage and family. And so we finally found a way through Maryvale Institute in England for me to finish my get a degree in marriage. And so I could do it like remote study. It was 15 years later from when we started this whole thing. And, and then that was when I was doing my dissertation, when I was handed the Italian copy of The Rule, a book with The Rule in it, mm-hmm. and these other two documents. And I did my dissertation on it.
Wow.
This woman who gave it to me, because I was floundering with, I don't know what to focus on, you know, what I want to write on, because everything is so awesome, you know.
Right.
So much, and especially with his theology of the body and everything, we just love, always loved St. John Paul II, mm-hmm. and felt drawn to him and drawn to his works. But then this woman, she's a single woman, works for the church in England, and because that's where the remote study institute was in Birmingham, England. Mm-hmm. And she said, I know what you should do. And she went over to the shelf and she's like, this has been waiting for you.
Oh my gosh.
And like, I looked back at that moment, and it was such a, now it's like, that was a prophetic moment. Because then the more, she's like, there's a rule in here that JP2 himself wrote for married couples. You've got to read it. You can do something with it. You can access it in a way that I can't. Wow. And thus began like the unfolding of like the next layer of our vocation, because we've been serving the church and marriage and family since we got married, but this was just like one more step. And then even just the other day when Peter and I were talking about it, he's like, you know, we were born for this, like living outside the box, thinking in a way that other people haven't, going ahead and doing what's not recommended, you know.
Right
like starting a nonprofit with absolutely no funding, with absolutely no knowledge of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, like we had the theology, but we had nothing else.
Yeah.
But the Holy Spirit just kept saying, follow me, just do it, just follow me. And step by step, he like unfolded it for us.
Wow. Talk about a leap of faith. I mean, and also the timing of everything and how you didn't finish your degree. So you were at this other, you know, institution, and then this opportunity presented itself. I mean, that's, you can't explain it other than that God working in your lives.
Absolutely. Even looking back when we were engaged, we knew we wanted to serve the church. Both of us felt that God was calling us in one way or another to serve him in the church, and it was through friends and through prayer that we realized, you know, marriage and family is where we should focus. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, went through the whole marriage preparation process. And in that, we started realizing that, boy, this process is inadequate. Like, there's just not a whole lot here for a couple to be educated on, you know, whereas in the priesthood, they have a minimum of 6 years of study before they receive the sacrament of holy orders. But we get, what, 12 hours if you're lucky, you know? And so we realized that, geez, this is why people are floundering in marriage so much, because they just don't really know what they're getting into. Like, everyone just believes that, well, marriage is relatively simple. And then, yeah, we realize that now, unfortunately, couples are divorcing within 6 months of marriage. And so we're like,
gosh,
there needs to be a little bit more education. And this is a huge answer to that desire that we had to educate couples on the beauty of marriage, the sacramental grace that's available in marriage. So it's God all the way, just saying, hey, I gave you this vocation, and I'm going to help you through it. I'm going to give you what's necessary for you to do the work that I've called you to.
Well, and so Pete's talking about two things I wanted to comment on. He's talking about educate couples, but the reality is, like, the rule of St. John Paul II for married couple groups is not, it's not a book study. It's more like a way of life. But, like, the framework of the rule, like, allows people to live those truths. Right. So a lot of the people who are interested in joining a married couple group have already studied theology of the body, have already, like, gone to talks, understand this stuff, maybe not studied it, like, in depth, but have, like, a basic understanding. And this gives them a tool to access it in a more profound way in their life. The other thing one of our children was coming in here when Peter was talking. So
no problem.
Her out without making a big scene.
You're totally fine.
But
I've got a baby napping now, so
okay.
I get
he's
it.
He's locked the door now, so. What I want to say was, you know, God can use everything. So part of the reality of our story is that we went to this one day kind of pre-Cana, and it was so awful.
Oh no!
And we're like, we could have taught this, and we're not even married yet, you know, it was just, it was pretty pathetic. But God uses everything, because that, like, gave us kind of this internal
desire
to help, to want to do something more, to want to step up. I mean, obviously that came from God's prompting as well. But it was just kind of funny that he can use anything. So
even a negative experience for sure. I completely agree with you guys that the formation before is lacking, for sure.
So, Teresa said it was awful, but it was, like, the people who ran it were doing the best that they could, but the whole situation was just not apt for a great deal of education. It was a cafeteria of a school.
Like, 50 couples all...
So
there were lots of people
packed.
There. But they were, like, on their phones.
So you could easily be distracted. So you could walk through the whole day, get the certificate, and not have learned anything.
Right.
Now,
it
was just this, okay, this process is not working because these couples don't care. Like, they're here for the day to get the certificate because they know they need that to get married.
Well, and it's so obviously, Pope Francis is pushing this, like, marriage catechumenate thing, so that there is more prep and more focus on the being prepared. But afterwards is important too. So that's why I love the name of your podcast too, the After Cana, because it's like you need something then more.
Right.
So you have these couples that have been a part of, like, whether it's Focus or their Newman Center, you know, on college campuses, and then they get married and they're really involved in their faith and they have a faith community amongst the students at the school that they were at, But then they get married and they get jobs and life gets busy. And all of a sudden there is no community support, like not in the same way where you're invested in each other on like a daily, weekly basis, you know? And so, and they want that. And you see people. So if, even for us, we, you know, worked, it was, we were 19 years married when we got the rule, right? Mm-hmm. This one about, or 18, anyway. So almost 20 years of working in the church, working for marriage and family, intentionally working on our communication. But then when we started following the rule, when we started intentionally meeting with other couples, something like amazing happened. It like took us to this new place of, because the whole point of the rule is that the foundation of it is to live out the truth of Humani Vitae. That's, it was promulgated right after Humani Vitae. It was written right after Humani Vitae was promulgated.
Okay.
But we didn't find it for a long time because it was because JP2 offered it to his people and they were like, we don't need this. We've got you. So he's like, so they were like, all right, we don't want anything. We don't want to
blame them, but
if there was ever a problem, they could go to Vujak, right? Uncle, and he would solve everything.
Makes sense.
So he just put it on the shelf, and we didn't discover it. It wasn't discovered until the cause for his canonization, where they have to go back through everything he wrote. So that's why we have never heard of it before. But the whole purpose of it is to live the truth of Humani Vitae. And as we know, like, theology of the body is expounding upon why Humani Vitae is right. So so we say on Humani Vitae, but that's like all the truth of marriage and family, especially, you know, theology of the body, that whole, that's all coming from this same vein. And so to be able to live this out in our daily lives, he said, and this was 50 years ago, he said, we're to live an authentic Christian marriage in an increasingly anti-Christian culture. And again, that was 50 years ago. So much more so now.
Yeah.
Takes heroic virtue.
Yeah.
And it's practically impossible to sustain heroic virtue with joy on a daily basis all on your own.
Right.
But with the support of community,
with
the support of this like intentional community of other couples, all of a sudden you have the strength to live at that level, and then you unlock this joy.
That's so beautiful.
So the heart of what we're doing is becoming who we're meant to be. So JP2, our mission statement is trusting the rule of St. John Paul II, because it he had obviously an integral vision of the person, of who man is and who he's called to be. And so by living the rule, each of the couples are becoming more of who they're meant to be. They're learning what marriage is, and then they're living it out at a deeper level, where before, as Teresa said, it's impossible and it's very difficult in this anti-Christian world for a couple to live out their marriage well on their own.
Right. Yes.
We have knocking at the door.
This is a
podcast for you, Gabby.
Hey, it's very dynamic. I love it. No problem. I can edit anything out. So.
Yeah, no. Or leave it.
Maybe. Or leave it. Hey, it's a natural. It's a natural.
I mean,
thing.
And that's part of it. So that's one thing, too. You had mentioned in some of these show notes is like we talk about there's this big phrase that JP2 uses, the integral vision of the person.
Yeah.
And he said to see, so integral we know means like holistic, right? Like entire. And he said to view each person in two moments, like when you're seeing someone, you see them now as who they are right now, but also you need to keep in mind who they're meant to be. So as you greet people, as you meet everyone, like be able to see that balance. So, this real, so we've dubbed it the real and the ideal, right? To keep this balance between the real and like people pounding on our door and the ideal of trying to do this podcast.
Yeah.
But no, it's beautiful because even in response to like Humani Vitae, people can err on one side or the other. And I think that's what JP2 was trying to find, that balance. So, like, on the one side, you can look too much at the real. Okay, this is challenging. It's a challenging teaching, right? And it challenges us to go against the tides of the world and what they're doing. And it's challenging in your relationship, too. If you decide, okay, we've discerned we need to wait before we have another kid, then there's some abstinence and stuff. And that's challenging and hard at times. Yeah. And so that there's that reel, and some people can look at that reel too much and be like, oh, that's too hard. Just do whatever you want. Just follow your conscience, right? In quotes, conscience. And err on the side of the reel. But then on the other hand, you might have people who are like, who cares? You know, just suck it up, shut up and do it, right? Because this is natural law and this is God's way and that's all there is to it. And what he says is that's not enough. Because that's just going to fall on deaf ears, right? Mm. Like, that's, sure. We have to meet them in their real. And we have to be sympathetic. And we have to understand, because guess what? It is hard. But that doesn't mean that it's possible. But it does mean that you need support. Mm. And I think a lot of times we're, at least for me, I mean, I don't know about anybody else or your audiences, but for me, a lot of times I feel like when I'm out in the world, I have to put on a good face for the homeschooling mother, Catholic mother of eight, right?
To
show that this can be done. And so you're, and maybe that's just me putting that on.
No, but like, I do. I mean, I only have one. We only have one right now, but I feel the same. And people are like, you're such a young mom. Like, how are you doing this? And I'm working and have her home with me while I'm working. And people just, don't think it's possible. So I definitely put that on, a face of like, no, it's great. And I love it. It's and I great. Can do it. I can... And I love being a mom, you know, more than anything. I mean, I love being a wife first, but, you know, being a mom second. And so anyway, but I totally understand.
Right? Yeah. And you still have those days where being a mom is really hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just want to stay in bed and pull the covers over your head and sleep all day, right?
Yeah.
But you can't.
Yeah.
And so sometimes those days are frustrating. And if you share that with someone who is not walking the same walk as you, they might be like, well, it's your own fault. You had so many kids, you know?
Exactly.
Or, well, we told you not to have so many kids, right? Like, you don't...
Yeah.
And so what I love about the married couple groups is, like, you can let your hair down a little bit and you can share your reel. This was a really frustrating week for raising the kids.
Right.
And I felt at my wit's end. I felt like a horrible mom. Mm. And other people can say, been there.
Yeah.
It's going to get better. You're doing a great job. And they can sympathize and not be like, well, it's on you. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. Not really... throw it back in your face, kind of.
Right.
Actually support you in that moment.
Yeah.
Lift you up
help
and
you
say.
Walk and, yeah.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
The beauty. So, as we said, JP2 just had this brilliance about him, knowing that this is what we need, right? We're made for community. We know this, but then, you know, we don't. In this world, we don't do it very well. We have email, we have text messages. Sometimes we'll pick up the phone, but more or less it'll be some sort of digital message, right? So we're not having this communion of persons in real life. And this married couple group gives us the opportunity to be truly involved in others' lives. And the beauty is that everybody's going through a season of life, and that we're all fighting very similar battles. And when we come together and see that, even so, a married couple group does not have to be a group that is all in a similar area of life. It doesn't have to be young parents. It doesn't have to be, you know, only the retired folks. It's the beauty is that all the couples that come together in a married couple group, they share the one thing in common, and that is marriage. And there's not an easy time in life to be married. Everybody goes through different struggles, but I think what combats the difficulty is that we don't have to believe the lies that Satan is telling us about our marriage, because we're sharing our real, and everyone, doesn't matter which side of, you know, maybe they're newlyweds or maybe they've been married for 50 years. Doesn't matter. They can say, no, that's a lie. That, you know, that we've been through this or we can see from the outside. So then all of a sudden we're recognizing the truth of who we are with people who are also living this truth. And yeah, all of a sudden we realize, oh, that we were being tempted and we didn't even know it. And it's just it's so refreshing.
And sometimes it's better to have the different ages. Like, we have some groups that are, like, similar ages, and that works, too. But JP2 called these a family of families. And so, in families, you have different generations. And we can learn from the older, the wisdom of people who've been there before. And we can, you know, gain from the energy and the excitement of those just starting off in their marriage. So you get the benefit of that. That beautiful dynamic and balance and different where people are in their stage of life. And sometimes it's nice too, because if everybody has little kids, then you don't have built-in babysitters. But if you have people with older kids, then they get, then that can work too.
Yes. That's great. I think that description of a family of families and this community of multiple generations kind of reminds me of what you mentioned before of the real and the ideal, like you, if you're a young couple, say going to this group, you're in this one stage and that feels very real to you, but you're also seeing this ideal of 50 years married with, you know, a great family and grandchildren and everything. So it kind of, again, brings that holistic, sense to the community. And I think that's so brilliant. And kind of in that same vein of real and ideal, I heard in a different interview I listened to that you guys were on, you talked about conjugal spirituality and kind of how it's, you know, bodily, material, physical, and spiritual ideal. Could you explain that kind of concept and how it relates to all of this and marriage?
Yeah. So, and it's, again, as I said earlier, this is like a little wink from God saying, because it was always on our heart to say, gosh, if couples only knew what they were receiving in the sacrament of matrimony, they wouldn't take it so flippantly. If they only knew that we receive grace through the sacrament, not just on our wedding day, but continually. So there's a couple things. I'll start with one, and then Teresa can follow up with another. When we get married, there's a new sacrament, clearly. But what happens, JP2 points out, is that, so we're two baptized people. We already have a relationship with the Father. We're a child of God, and we receive grace through the sacrament of baptism. By being a child of God, we have this relationship with God. But in marriage, the two baptized take on another sacrament. And in that marriage, it's as if there's a new relationship with God. And that relationship between the marriage itself, so the couple, and God, is what JP2 points out is that conjugal spirituality. So the greater our relationship, our personal relationship is with God, and the greater our marriage is by communicating, by offering our love, by dying to self for the other, then God supplies grace through that sacrament. And so that's that conjugal spirituality. And so what we're looking to do in the rule is to strengthen that. So strengthen our marriage, but then recognize that God has something in store for our marriage. God wants to love us in our marriage in a new way. He's going to love us because we are a child of God through our baptism. But now in marriage, he's also going to pour his grace out through us because, and Teresa can talk more about it, but obviously marriage has a unique dignity of being an image of God in the world. So God, of course, wants to strengthen that so that his love can be spread throughout.
Yeah, and beautiful. So that conjugal spirituality that Peter was talking about, JP2 said that union, that spiritual union, could be so profound that you have one interior life. I mean, just let that sink in for a second, like what that means and how united you could be. Because the other aspect of this that helps understand how God's grace works is, he said, the fact that in marriage, the priest does not marry you. You actually confer the sacrament to each other, which we knew. Like, we knew that.
Right.
But the distinctness that JB2 says is that for the rest of your life, like, that giving of the sacrament to each other doesn't stop on your wedding day. Mm. So for the rest of your life, you are the conduit of the action of God in your spouse's life.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
So the more that you're in a state of grace, and the more that you're open, and then grace builds on nature too, right? So the more that you're making yourself available for your own personal prayer and your own personal, you know, spiritual growth, learning how to better, you know, communicate with your spouse, the more you're doing that and being aware of, Lord, you know, pour into us, make us more united, help us in this path, then you really can be, like, God will give you those moments of inspiration where you move, you have the same, like, internal movements, and then I'm coming to Pete to talk about something, he's coming to me to talk about something, and actually, it was the same thing that God mm-hmm. is, like, put on our hearts at the same moment, even though we weren't together. Yeah. So it doesn't always happen, like, at the kneelers in church, but, like, wherever you are, it's every moment and fabric of your marriage being just imbued with the Christ's giving his love of giving himself up for his bride, the church, right? So yeah. You have this, and that's, you know, just reflecting what Peter was saying about the whole marriage being a reflection of God's love, right? Yeah. And the stronger marriages are, and the more that you can witness that love and that joy, the more that we shine hope to a hopeless world, right? Like, and true. That we can, the more we can shine God's love out, the more other people catch on to that. And so we talk about growing in holiness. We talk about, like, having this one interior life, growing in our conjugal spirituality, which is just spousal holiness, right? And mm-hmm. being united and being connected to God in that union. And the point, though, is not, like, holiness. Sometimes we can think of, like, these saints in heaven, oh, you know, like, this just very devout and peaceful. But that's not holiness. Right? Yeah, right. Well, you know, because you, like, check off the box and whatever. And mm-hmm. But holiness brings joy. So holiness is closeness to God. Holiness is, like, by definition, being set apart for God. So it doesn't mean this, like, strict, you know, severe life. Holiness means you're close to God. And the closer you actually, like, authentically get to God, not just because you said 20 rosaries a day or something, right? Authentically being close to God must lead to joy. And that is one thing that we have found by leaps and bounds. Like, we feel like when we have started participating in the married couple groups, even though we had been intentionally working on our marriage for almost 20 years, once we started the married couple groups, it was like climbing the mountain ourselves or catching the ski lift, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, there was just something beautiful about following. And at the beginning, like, our mission statement, like Pete had said earlier, is trusting the rule of St. John Paul II, because we didn't know if it would work or not, really. When it came down to it, because we didn't have any proof for anybody.
Yeah.
But now we do. And there are, we have over 50 leader couples trained now in 16 states, in the United States and Australia. And England is next, actually. There'll be people from England in our next leader couple training coming up in February. So it's been beautiful. And to see not only has it affected our marriage, but just hearing from people that they were like, well, we gave it a go just because you said, no, let's try it, you know, and never realizing that they actually got something even more, like, because you don't know what you don't know until you first experience it. And then you're like, what? And now, like, there was this one group that was like, the commitment's too much, because it is kind of a weekly commitment. You meet with your married couple group 3 times a month. And then the fourth week you would meet as a community, like the family of families, right? So you bring all your kids together and invite other people, because we don't want to be cliques, right? Like, so you're extending it outward. Yeah. And part of being in the rule is having an apostolate. So moving forward then, people would be like, oh, that's too much. But then, you know, like, slowly, like, warm up to the idea. And then when they actually do it, that's when they were like, I can't believe this. Like, the same people who are like, heck no, we're not going to meet every week, come back and say, there's no way I'm ever stopping this. There's no way I'm ever giving this up. Like, I can't live without it. Now that I know what's accessible and what's possible, like, I think for marriage, we talk about the bar being like, don't get divorced, right? Yes. Like, successful marriage, you haven't been divorced. Mm-hmm. But there's so much left on the table that's there for us if we just turn up the emphasis just a little bit more.
Mm. Wow, I love that. So as you're talking about, you know, building these great communities and lifting each other up in holiness, I was kind of thinking to myself, what are some very practical ways to apply this outside of the groups, just in your own home? What does that daily spirituality kind of look like for a couple who wants to embrace this? I'm sure reading the book would obviously help a lot, but what's kind of some way that you can bring this into your home?
Well, so we always say that grace builds on nature, and the goal of living the rule is to build that couple spirituality, to build your conjugal spirituality. So basically the goal is to have a strong marriage and to be joyful, to be on fire with the love of Christ. And so that same suggestion is, you know, would be on any other podcast, is just grow in holiness. So do the little things. So we love, Mother Teresa said, you know, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. So we're given all sorts of opportunities to grow in holiness. And if you're not finding them, just ask, hey, God, give me something.
Don't ask it. No,
I'm just kidding. It'll be like a flood of...
The prayer for humility is the most powerful prayer. It'll happen immediately, you know? Yeah. That's just it. Like, the little things is where it's at. So in our married couple group, we have every week a conjugal spirituality challenge. So all the couples walk away with a weekly challenge of doing something, and it's rarely a large thing. It's something small, like, hey, this week surprise your spouse with something that they love that they're not expecting. So these are little things that you can be doing all the time. We are blessed. We've been in marriage ministry reading books and listening to podcasts and always focused on marriage, our whole marriage. And so we've always...
Spoiled. Yeah,
we've always taken these little pieces of advice, like, don't ever stop becoming a student of your spouse. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always something more that you can learn from your spouse that you never knew. So always have that healthy curiosity of what makes you tick. So we've been married 23 years now, and there's always something more that we can learn from one another. So that's for, you know, a little piece of advice of, you know, what can we do? Well, we can just do the little things.
Yeah. And you can, one thing too, take your spouse on a marriage retreat. You know, like, even if you're not ready to, like, to commit to something on a weekly or monthly basis, like, go on a retreat just once a year. Does loads to give you that, like, shot in the arm, that spiritual shot in the arm, and unite you in a deeper way. We have some on our website and all over too. So we have retreats in Winona, Minnesota, as well as
Cedar Rapids,
Iowa, and down in Louisiana, Lafayette, Louisiana, in the next summer. So,
We'll link it all in the show.
But yeah, I mean, there's so much that you can do, but also just understanding that there is more grace available than you realize. Mm-hmm. So in those moments, just being able to stop, pause, and just say, Lord, give me that grace that I heard them talking about. Give me that. I need that. Yeah. And he will, like, God will not force it upon us. But if we ask for it, he'll give it, and he'll give as much as we can handle, and then he'll take us to that next place and give us something more.
I love all of that, all those suggestions, definitely taking them into my marriage. That's great. And so I know some of the people who will be listening to this maybe aren't married yet, are single, but they've discerned marriage as their vocation, or they're with someone they believe, you know, could be their spouse, or they're engaged, what are some things you would say to them, you know, kind of from the other side, looking back? What are some things that people should be looking for in a potential spouse, and then B, what are some ways that couples can date intentionally to kind of preempt the rule even before they're married?
So the best advice I ever got was to start praying for your future spouse. Somebody told me this while I was in the seminary, actually. And they said, you know, it's part of your discernment. You're praying. Maybe your spouse will be the church. Maybe your spouse will be someone else. But start praying for them now so that if you or when you meet them, you already have a spiritual relationship and you've already started the habit of desiring their good, their greatest good. You're praying for their healthiness, their holiness, that you want what's best for them already. So you're already starting the habit of being that good spouse that you're called to be.
Yeah, and I would think just keep trusting God and not afraid to step out of your comfort zone and not afraid to make mistakes, which also means you have to, not get too physical, right, if you're dating or whatnot. Right. Because the more physical you get, the harder it is to realize and to recognize this is not the best fit for me. Right. This is not leading me to be the best woman or man I'm called to be in God's eyes. Right. And it's harder to break off such a relationship if you're physically involved with that person. So to just, you know, to keep it and not like puritanical, right? But like just to keep boundaries so that you can remain objective while you're discerning if this is this the person that God has intended for me. And if so, once you get to marriage too, you'll be so much better off by building that strong foundation of friendship and of just that personal dialogue and that personal connection, more so than just the physical too, because that'll come. I mean, we're human beings and that's always there to be cultivated, you know, but being free to, to say, nope, not the right one and not have emotional strings attached. I remember my grandmother, who, God rest her soul, she passed away a few years ago, but she grew up, was she dating in the 40s or the 50s?
Yeah.
Okay. In the 50s. And she used to brag that she used to date 5 guys at once and not like on the same
different,
day.
Different time. Right?
Every Saturday night, her date would come pick her up and take her out, you know, they'd go dancing or they go bowling or they go to, you know, wherever the next, whatever. I don't know.
That fun thing,
something where there was lots of people, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a single, just you and the date. But then, so she always talked about this and how she was like belle of the ball kind of thing. Like she bragged about it. But then you come to find out she didn't have her first kiss until she was engaged.
Wow. And you wouldn't think that hearing that story.
Right. You wouldn't. But that gave her the freedom to be like, no. And she said this one, she remembers dating this one guy, but she said he was too vanilla. So he was too blah. Right.
I love it.
She ended up, even as being an Irish, an Irish Catholic, she ended up marrying this like darker German Lutheran.
Okay,
kind of like such a scandal, but she's like, oh, everybody else is too vanilla pudding. That's what
I
she
need
was
a little
like,
oh. little flavor. That's
exactly.
So funny.
But like she had the freedom to do that because that other side of it was not as connected, right?
Sure.
Like and so I think that's what I'm trying to get at is if you're still in the dating phase, to keep, I mean, you can invest in people, but to just keep it objective until God makes this perfectly clear, right? And trust God. Like, there will, if this is not the right person, there will be somebody else. There will be.
Right.
But we have to take that scary, like, because sometimes it's comforting to know that you are dating someone. You know what I mean? Like, that security. And to let that person go if they're not the right person, even though it's scary, might be the best thing you can do for your life.
Yeah, that's so true. That is so true. I think we've really lost that art of casual dating that isn't, you know, what it is today. Where, you know, everything happens on the first date or whatever.
Right.
And it kind of, this is, in my experience, I went to a small Catholic college where people were very focused on, like, what is my vocation? You know, I'm looking for that person. And even in that kind of environment, it was sometimes tricky because you would say yes to a date and then the whole school knew you were going on a date with someone. And then it was like, are they going to get married one day? And you haven't even gone on your first date. So
yeah.
I think if anyone's listening who's in that environment, take the pressure off. It's okay to get to know people and, you know, in a, obviously in a guarded way, but it's okay to test the waters, if you will.
And,
to not go steady.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I think that's really good advice. Mm-hmm. And this is, I'm just curious really, but what was it about each other that, you know, you thought, this is my person when you two were dating?
Well, at first we didn't. It was not love at first sight.
Okay.
He was in the seminary.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
I was trying to leave the seminary, actually.
But I didn't know that. I just knew seminary, off limits.
Right,
walk away,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I got hoodwinked, but I expected not to be in the seminary that particular semester because we were studying abroad. So we were studying in Rome for the University of St. Thomas, and I just decided that, no, I'm going to leave the seminary. I'm pretty sure I'm not called to the priesthood anyway. Mm-hmm. But, like, a couple days before going to Rome, the vocation director called and said, hey, here's what we're going to do to keep you on the roster.
You're like,
as a seminarian. I'm like, no, I'm not even living in a seminary. And he's like, that's okay, we're going to keep you on the roster. So technically I was a seminarian, but I was trying to leave. Anyway, Teresa and I were friends that semester because, we just, our personalities clicked and we were really good friends, and it was a small group of, there were like 9 of us. And so we would say that we were like the 2 sane people. There were other sane people, but we got along.
Well, we understood each other and we're not caught up in the drama. I think one of the things after I yelled at him, then there were things that like I started seeing. So we were just friends. And speaking of people like making assumptions about who you're hanging out with.
Yeah.
So I started hearing this like rumor going around. I mean, there were only like 5 girls and 7 guys on this is one of the very first Catholic studies study abroad. And we were staying in this like hostel, like convent turned hostel, like with these crazy nuns. And they got to stay at the, with the Dominican friary right on.
Oh, nice.
Just there. But anyway, in our little group, there was like whispers of this other girl and Teresa are fighting over Pete.
Oh my gosh.
I did not start that.
Anyway, so I was like,
he's a player.
No. So I sat him down. No, because we weren't dating. We were just
right,
friends.
Exactly.
So I was like, I have a bone to pick with you. And we went to the little bar meaning cafe, because we were in Rome. So we went to this little cafe and sat down, and I was like, we are not in 7th grade, and I do not appreciate people talking about me, and we are not, like, I just, like, laid into him, and I was just like, I do not appreciate this. This is stupid.
Oh,
we're just friends. I don't want people, like, pretending that
business.
I'm trying to, like, come after you, and for whatever reason, blah, blah, blah. I was like,
and the funny thing is,
I was like, I was so mad, because I was like, stop playing games. This is stupid.
She was mad, and I think she was also kind of nervous that this could wreck our friendship, but she didn't care. She stood up for herself, and she was probably nervous that, okay, he's going to be
speaking
mad.
Speaking of being detached,
And I was, the whole time, I was just like I am right now, and I was smiling, and she's like, what? Why are you not upset? I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like,
oh my gosh.
I've never had anyone fuss at me, and I'm cool and collected because I didn't actually do anything wrong. So right. you're fussing, but I didn't do it. It wasn't me. But I was also at the same time, like, that was the day where I became so attracted to Teresa because I was like,
I yelled at him.
Yeah. Cause I'm like, I've never seen this in a woman. Like, this is, I love her backbone. I love the amount of respect she has for herself. And honestly, like a week later, I realized I have to ask her to date because we are more than just friends now. It was interesting how it worked,
but that
was like the moment where I realized, oh no, I feel more for her than just friendship now.
And then, so we were friends, and like, that's what was just ticking me off. I'm like, I'm just trying to be
like a friend,
right? Like, I'm not trying for anything else. I just want to be friends. And, but what attracted me to Peter was his just his traditional Catholic environment that he grew up in. His brother's a priest, or was just ordained a priest, and he was taught the traditional prayers and just lists. And I grew up in a charismatic Catholic family in New Orleans, and so there was my parents were brought up in traditional Catholic environments, but I was fed this very, I mean, it was beautiful, but it was just like a different different side of Catholicism, right? And this more spontaneous prayers and this, and there was something about like what I saw in Pete was like this rock, really, like that's why his name
I love it.
But yeah, this security of this tradition of the church, and that environment and that strength, I think, is what really attract, besides that he's cute, that helps. but no, his like his strength and his like faithfulness, like he didn't have like the impulsive and that charismatic like zeal that I was like used to when people prayed or whatever, but he was always faithful, like to saying his morning prayers, to going to daily mass, to doing all these things, you know, even wearing the scapular and everything, like these were little tokens of things that I hadn't always seen consistent, you know, growing up. And here's this guy who might not show all of his emotions or even know that he has emotions, but just this consistent, faithful man.
Right. It's that, that discipline is very, I think, I mean, my husband's the same way. And that's what I found attractive about him too. Just that, consistent, sturdy. And you just know that discipline will translate into your married life. And as I'm sure you guys have seen, I love that whole story. That's amazing. And it's do you still love her backbone? You know, no, I'm kidding.
Really? Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay. You have to love.
Of course. Yes.
You have to love somebody enough to put up, to fight like in a good sense.
Yes.
Right. Like there are people that we know who, the husband is like, whatever. Like as soon as the wife like gets strong or gets, you know, get like state, but the wife didn't want him to just back down. She wanted the engagement, right? Well,
yes.
Needless to say, the people are divorced now.
Oh like, my gosh! Just, yeah.
You have to be willing to get messy sometimes. Do you know what I mean? And be willing to go into that real and that nitty gritty and recognize that, okay, we both have strong personalities. Mm-hmm. And so we will sometimes butt heads. But more and more so, like, I think the Satan gets in there and can lie to you that he's thinking this or she's thinking that. Mm-hmm. And that's what working on your communication can help eliminate too, is the lies. Because half the time when we sit down to, we do dialogue, communication where you write down things and then you switch it and read it. When we talk about something that we're like not hearing each other and kind of arguing a little bit, then we're like, okay, we need a dialogue about this. And then we do, and we're saying the exact same thing. We switch our notebooks and we're like, are you kidding me? Why were we fighting? But we were fighting because we were fighting against like the narrative that was in our head that wasn't even real, you know?
Right. Assumed intention and all of that. The worst. But that's such a good way to do it and such a good way to kind of step away from the emotional, intense side of an argument.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, get a more objective kind of.
It's necessary throughout marriage, but definitely at the beginning of marriage, because we are very, you know, there's that lie of, oh my gosh, if this is happening now in year three of marriage, then it's going to happen for the rest of our lives. You know, you've got that intensity, so it's good to just back down and say, all right, let's just actually have a conversation about this, but let's just take it out of the passion where we can evaluate it a little bit more soberly. And that, and Teresa's right, like 9 times out of 10, we talk about it through this method and we're like, wait, why were we so upset? Like, well, there was a lot of passion. There's a lot involved. Sure. And then too, obviously there's a lot of reasons that we get upset. You know, the timing of it, you might be sick or
The kids have been,
you know, you might have financial stress.
Very hectic day.
All those things get in the way as well, which is why this method of communication is so perfect, because just it's meant to be away from all of that so that you're actually able to think about it, write it down, and then outside of the passion of it, read how the other is actually feeling and then realize, oh, whoops, we were,
Well, and to realize that it is more important to be loving than to be right. Mm. And that, I think, when you're first married, when you're first married,
speak there for might yourself. Be
a, yeah, right. There might be a fear that I'm going to lose myself, right?
Yeah.
But if you're both going into this union, like to trust God and trust your spouse enough to let go and to stop trying to hold on to something, whatever that something, like that you're not going to get lost. And that's one thing that JV2 talks about too, in this, like, you could be so united, you have one interior life. Like the idea that this is not a losing of self. He says, you don't get lost, you get perfected in this gift of self.
Yeah.
And I think that's beautiful. And because I think a lot of times it's our pride that creates the friction, because, like, I want my way, or I think
we have means for our lives.
I have a better idea than he does. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I need to correct his idea and make sure, I need to make certain that it fits in with my, do you know what I mean? Like, I need to, instead of just saying, okay, God's in this.
Right.
And be patient with God, be patient with your spouse, because God is guiding him, God is guiding me, God is guiding us together, and it's going to be okay. So right now, the most important thing is not that I prove my point, but that I just step back and I love him, which seems obvious, but in the moment,
simple,
it's not
but no, right. And I think too, at least in today's culture and everything, I think women especially are really taught, like, you have to, like, stand your ground and no budging on anything. And, you know, if you're, like, a quote-unquote submissive wife, as, like, scripture says, you know, you're weak and you're letting your husband dominate and all these things. And I think it's just completely misses the whole point of, no, we're actually a team. We're actually one. And sometimes women and men are stubborn, and that's not a virtue. No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you're painting those very two distinct, you know, very two opposite pictures. But I think JP2 would say that that's why we need that balance of that real and the ideal.
Yeah.
Because if you're living, because that he would say that whole scripture of, you know, wives be submissive to your husbands starts by saying spouses be submissive to one another under Christ, out of reference to Christ. And JP2 puts that whole thing under that umbrella. Mm-hmm. And so understanding that there isn't, it doesn't mean, right, like whatever he says goes and I lost myself. Right?
Totally.
If you're in a loving relationship, and this is what I love about, like, what the focus is of the rule and making sure that we're hearing each other, is that both spouses get heard. No matter who has a more, like, dominant personality, both spouses get heard. Both spouses get loved. And so if he's working every day to love me more than yesterday, and to do more for me more than he did the day before. Mm-hmm. And I'm working to love him more than the day before. And if we're both working on how can I love my spouse better, we are both going to feel fulfilled. We are going to feel treasured. We're going to feel loved. And then the more you feel that, the more you're like, why wouldn't I do anything for him? You know, absolutely. Why wouldn't I let him have his way in this when I feel so cared for and so loved and all my, you know, emotional and physical needs are being met and upheld, like even more than maybe I would have, you know, done for myself. He's the one to say, no, you need to go buy that new outfit or do that, you know, like the things that I might not choose to pamper myself with or whatever. He's there to say, you need this. I love you. I want you to feel healthy and whole and have your own, you know, mental, spiritual balance as you're balancing all these other things.
Yeah. I love that so much. That's a perfect, the balance is key. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So just a couple more things before we wrap up, but, this is just a question we like to ask, you know, everyone who comes on the show. What is a piece of advice, your favorite piece of advice or something that's, you know, rung true in your marriage that you would give to either your past self, you know, before you got married, or you would give to young couples who are just starting out and want to build this holy, faith-centered relationship?
Yeah, I think probably just... In a general way, just to take yourself lightly. I feel like there's so many moments. Like,
I was gonna looking, say, don't sweat the small stuff.
It's looking back at our marriage, and this is the beauty of being with couples that have been together for so long. They have this wisdom that isn't in the moment. So within the first 7 years, everything is just so dramatic. Like, and I'm not discounting the fact that, yes, it's hard to be counting pennies, and it's hard to say, well, we can't go on vacation because we just don't have it. We don't have enough vacation in the bank, right? We can't go any place because we're either financially strapped or we're just too young in our position. We don't get that much vacation, whatever it is.
Right.
All these things, they seem so dramatic, but if you just are able to laugh at the situation and recognize that this is not the end of the world, maybe someday we'll get to go on that vacation, but now is not the time. And I think, just the idea that it seems like it's really dramatic, but maybe we should step back. That's why we find it so amazing to be living in this kind of community of couples, because they can help us to put things in perspective. Mm-hmm. And you know, we constantly see people giving advice of, it's not as bad as it seems. Like, I know right now it feels like, because you've got three kids in diapers or whatever it is, it feels like you're not going to make it, but this will pass and you will make it. And if you want, we can help you. And it's a blessed way to live your marriage in these married couple groups, because there's so much assistance psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, obviously. So,
I would think even as you're planning too, like you're planning your life together and what's coming next, to not miss the present.
Right.
Like, even if it's stressful right now today, this is where life happens.
Yeah.
And the synthetic friendships and like synthetic community, like all this online, texting with people and even communicating with people on Facebook and Instagram, wherever, is not the same as the in-person.
Face.
Yeah. And the real organic community that's around you and your kids.
Yeah.
And realize that you are... right now, wherever you are in your stage of life, you're living your fairy tale right now. You are living the dream life that God has planned for you. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not on the most exciting chapter. that's okay. You're still on your way there. Life is not going to happen when. Life is happening right now. Mm-hmm. And to be able to embrace that and be like, this is my life. Like, what if there's something that you're like, I wish I had, change it, do it, take that leap of faith, you know, do it now. Don't wait. Don't think that, you know, when we get that job or when we move to that house or when we have kids or when I get married, like that life will start happening. Like, embrace the fact that God is with you and God has a plan for your life and it's happening right now.
Amen. That is so beautiful. I love it. I think that advice will help so many people just shift their mindset. And yeah, that's great. Speaking of our listeners, how can people get involved in these groups? Where can they find you? Where can they find the rule? Just, we want to hear all about how we can access these resources.
So we do have a website. The easiest way to get to it is jp2rule.com. So that's jpiirule.com or the number two works.
Either way, that'll
get to the website. Our nonprofit is the Wojtyła Community and Institute, and it has all the information about the rule, how to start married couple groups.
And some of our videos. We've been interviewed by Chris Stefanik, as well as Messy Family.
There's lots of ways so you can get the information from podcasts and you can get that. But then, like, the next level up, we would say, other than, you know, you can buy the book, read the book.
And you can get it anywhere. Like, so if you like getting your stuff on Amazon, just type in The Rule, Martins, it'll pop up.
Right. Nice. And I would say the next level up would be to go ahead and look at the retreats that we offer, because that allows you in a weekend, it allows you to actually experience what we do.
It's so cool.
And then to see the potential. I said, you get the information from the podcast and you can hear us talk about it, but there's something about, like, you're there and you're face to face with Jesus in the tabernacle, or sometimes we're blessed to have adoration. And it changes you, and you realize, holy cow, there's more to our marriage than what we've tapped so far. Mm. And then you start to think, if we went this far and on this weekend retreat, imagine what it would be like. So that's my advice, is to say, awesome. You can kind of dabble in it, and a lot of people are, which is great. I mean, it's some people take time to kind of wrap their heads around it, but I would say a good experience is the retreat. And then
if you want to take the next step, we do. So what we have is a leader couple training, so to just empower the leader couple to help them get the vision. And that's online, training online. Everybody has a mentor couple. So it's very personal. Nice. Again, like, even though it is online, we try to make it as personal. It's not just a plug and play. So we make it as personal as possible. And then with that, you have workbooks and conjugal spirituality journals, and it makes it so easy to start a married couple group. We went through all the hard stuff for you, all the trial and error, and what was, like, what works, what doesn't work. And so we punched through that wall, and so far the feedback from this, from what we've had is that this is the easiest thing. Like, we just follow the workbook and we do it, and God's grace is just pouring in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so, so excited to share all of this with our listeners, and we will link all of these things in the show notes. Thank you guys so much for speaking with me today. I loved hearing your story, loved hearing all about the rule. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us and working for marriage yourself and giving people more, because sometimes that's the hardest thing. Like, even if they have good marriage prep, they get married and then it's just like parish life. This is great for people to tap into.
If you enjoyed this episode of After Cana, share it with a friend, leave a review, or head to the Ferris Love website for more resources on building relationships and families of faith.